Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hyperthetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hyperthetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hyperthetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from good goddesses to gaunt goats. Today, we are talking about goths.
Prepare yourselves.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will. What's up with goths? I haven't seen any since high school.
I mean, Hot Topics are still around, and I think they still go to there.
I think they sell, like, 90s Nickelodeon cartoon t-shirts now instead of, like, you know, wristbands and stuff. And
I, you know, I haven't been to a Hot Topic since, like, my early 20s. But
well, that's pretty telling.
I did enjoy the store when I
went. Will. You're older.
Well, today we're not talking about those kind of goths. We're talking about a different type of goth. We are talking about the beholderkin creature,
right,
known as the goth.
Before we get into that, I wanted to I wanted to reach out to our audience, our beautiful, wonderful audience who stuck with us through many editions, many monsters, many character builds. If you guys could leave a review of the show in some capacity, whether that be an iTunes review or whatever podcast app you listen to, please review the show. Or if you're watching on YouTube, if you could hit the like, subscribe, hit that little bell, I guess. I think that's good for us.
Notification. Or just, I think that's good.
I think it's good. Just talk about the show in general and tell somebody. We're running a contest right now.
And we
do that periodically. We're going to give away the new Ravenloft book that's coming out. You can follow our social media for that. But it really helps the visibility of the show. I noticed in weeks where we have more reviews come in, our numbers just kind of like spike. So if you guys could get out there and do that, that would be super duper helpful to tell people about the Dungeon Cast. We'd really appreciate it. And right now you can share the show on social media and get a book out of it, hopefully.
Indeed.
Yeah.
A really exciting book at that. One I'm excited for, at least.
Yeah, definitely. Ravenloft is a huge campaign setting. A lot of people play it. So,
yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading.
That's it for me. Sorry for the interruption. We normally don't like to do that at the top of the episode, but thought, you know, hey, give it a shot.
Okay. So today we are tackling another beholderkin creature, the goth, or is it gauth? I'm not actually sure, but I've been pronouncing it as goth this entire time, so I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
This beholderkin is most often referred to as a lesser beholder, and in so many ways it is. It has many of the hallmark features of the classic beholder: giant ego, tyrannical, multi-eyed rays, antisocial, etc. It is just less so in all of these categories.
Okay.
It's got an ego. It's a diet beholder, yes. It's got an ego, and it likes to have it soaked via slaves and tribute, but it does not see itself as the perfect being. It has only 6 rather than 10 eye rays. It is antisocial, but not xenophobic to the extreme, and works better with others of its kind than your average beholder. So often on the show, I find myself saying, oh, this thing is like this other thing, but it dials it up to 11. But with the goth, I would say that it is very much like the beholder, but it dials it down to a 7. We will spend the rest of this episode comparing this poor guy to the beholder, and I'm afraid he just will not measure up. That being said, the goth is a dastardly and vile creature, both extremely dangerous and evil. You do not want to run into one, especially if you have a magic item on your person, because they like to eat those.
Oh, what? Okay, so instead of, like, does it still have an anti-magic cone?
We'll get into it. Okay. Not exactly, no. It has other things.
Okay, lesser. Yeah. Because I was going to say, is like, how would it know if it turns the magic off of stuff? But, yeah.
Well, let's get into it.
All right.
So the goth or lesser beholder, also known as a night eyes for some unexplained reason. I mean, I guess they have dark vision, but so do all the other beholders. So I'm not sure what that's about.
Okay.
It is a 4 foot wide biological orb dominated by a central eye. This makes it 2 to 3 feet smaller in diameter than a proper beholder. As I said before, rather than 10 individual eye stalks, Agoth only has 6 smaller eyes on stalks sprouting from the top of its body, along with 4 feeding tendrils that hang from the lower half of its body.
Oh, gross.
Indeed. The Goth's large central eye is unique to others of its kind in that it is surrounded by a thick ridge of flesh embedded with 12 to 15 smaller eyes. So it's really gross looking.
The large central eye is surrounded by a thick ridge of flesh. Oh my gosh. Okay. I have the Volo's guide here with me.
Yeah. Pull up the photo. Like, I'm doing the best I can describing this thing, but yes. Oh. It's got a thick ridge of flesh. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And the ridge of flesh is full of eyes.
This reminds me
below
of
the
things I shouldn't talk about on the show.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Below the Goth's central eye hub is a gaping maw of razor-sharp teeth, not unlike that of a greater beholder, albeit the mouth is smaller and with less teeth. Again, everything a Goth has, a beholder has more of. The most common Goths tend to be brown and mottled purple and gray, although there are variant species of the specimen similar in color and texture to classic beholders.
This would make a cool donut, almost, I think. You know what I mean? Like, if we, like, custom made a donut to look like a D&D monster, this would be a good pick.
I mean, it's as good a candidate as any beholder, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think the Goth is making me realize how good, like, if you're going to have a D&D-themed party, like, and you want snacks that are, like, aesthetically designed, the Goth is a good, beholder's a good pick.
I guess so.
Cookies and
donuts.
You can
make a nice beholder pastry,
yeah,
I suppose.
You could put, like, a cream puff as an eye in the middle.
Exactly.
This thing
there
with,
we
like,
go.
The ring around.
Now we're cooking with gas.
The ring of eyes around this thing's eye. Oh.
They're disgusting.
Yeah.
So, unlike many beholderkin we have spoken about on the show, the Goth doesn't seem to have an actual relation to the beholder itself. What I mean by that is it isn't born from a transformed beholder or brought into existence by the thoughts and dreams of a beholder. It is instead stated to be the native denizen to some mysterious plane of existence, not normally accessible to beings of the material plane. This is, of course, most likely referring to the Far Realm, but it isn't actually stated as such. Like, no mention of the Far Realm is made in any of the source books that I could find mentioning the Goths. So,
this is so strange. Like, how are you labeled as a beholderkin, but you don't have any actual, like, relation other than the visual? You know, you kind of...
I mean,
look like a beholder.
There could be. I think the idea here is that there must be some sort of relation because they are way too similar to not be. But that whatever that is not actually known, because the only way anyone ever encounters these things is when they somehow cross over from their very specific dimension.
Maybe a beholder had like a static dream, like a fuzzy dream where like it got a lot of the details got lost and it tried to breathe itself into existence from its sleep and like did a bad job. So now we have the Goth.
I mean, maybe that's one thing. I mean, maybe a beholder got sucked into some pocket dimension and then while it was there, it either birthed and or created, turned itself into what we know as a Goth. And now whenever beholders get pulled from that dimension, like they're Goths. So
that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can hand wave it however you want. All you need to know is that these things are like beholders, but not as bad. And also there's no relation.
Yeah. G2 beholders, B2.
Indeed. Whatever plane of existence the Goth hails from, it is thought to be the same plane of existence as another beholderkin, the Spectator. So we haven't talked about this beholderkin yet, so I'm not going to get too into the details, but spectators are brought to the material plane by spellcasters using a summoning ritual. It's the only way spectators ever cross to our realm.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And by our realm, I mean the material plane.
Right.
When the ritual to summon the spectator goes wrong, though, a Goth might push itself through the flawed connection instead, arriving immediately and or several minutes later. It might even present itself as a beholder to ignorant creatures in an attempt to intimidate them, or as a spectator if its summoner is a complete moron and doesn't know what a spectator looks like because they don't look alike at all, really.
And it's highly likely that that's the case, that the summoner is an idiot because they did a bad job like doing the summoning.
True. That's a good point, because I was just like, what summoner would see a Goth and think it was a spectator? But the one who did it wrong, that's the one. Yeah. That's the summoner who would think that.
For real.
So yeah, that's... Though I'm sure goths can and do find their way into the prime material plane in other ways, this is the only given course they can do so in the source books that I've read. Goths live for approximately one century, and 1 week after their death, if their death was from natural causes and they weren't murdered, two smaller goths will form out of the dead one's body.
Whoa.
That's how they procreate.
So, okay.
Asexual division.
So after 100 years pass, and then this thing rots for a week, and then like two smaller ones just like come out. I'm sure they grow and get bigger and become regular sized goths, I guess.
Yeah. It's essentially just mitosis that takes a century.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So,
I mean, maybe that's why they die. Maybe you can tell a goth is about to die when like there's a weird like kind of like indenture in its head and almost feels like looks like it's being split in two.
Yeah,
like, and then it dies, and a week later the body kind of it looks like it's rotting, but really it's just two new bodies pulling apart from each other.
Yeah, like it dies because it's split. It's like molting, sort of. Like, yeah, the mitosis.
Yeah,
it's like exactly. Just mitosis. So that early stage. So you'll see that goth kind of like have that figure eight kind of bubble look to them.
Is yeah, that about? Disgusting figure eight.
Yeah. Oh, great. Good times.
So the goth is a rapacious and tyrannical creature that seeks to enslave and exact tribute, meat, treasure, and magical items from anything weaker than itself.
Okay.
They are defined by their greed and by their hunger. Goth often attack adventuring groups simply to acquire their wealth and for no other reason. Though aggressive and violent, goths are also quite cowardly creatures, though. Mm. When facing a threat by a creature not obviously weaker than themselves, they will instead heavily rely on allies and slaves for protection, perfectly willing to sacrifice those allies to spare its own life.
Wow. This is cool.
Yeah. I mean, the goth is just kind of a dick.
Yeah. I like this, like, trying to get... Does the regular beholder like collect stuff, like physical objects like this?
No, not usually.
Okay, so that's the main difference I'm seeing is like it wants material possessions.
Right, and there is reason for some of these possessions, which we will get into after a short rest.
Let's do a short rest. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle.
Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga, a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
We returned. Indeed, we're back at it again. God damn it, DeGonzo.
Indeed we are. And we're back talking about the Goth or the Gouth. I'm not sure which it is. I'm going with Goth. It sounds cooler.
Yes.
A Goth's worst fear in all its life is running into a beholder. Beholders.
Okay.
Yeah. Beholders, being the hyper paranoid xenophobic megalomaniacs they are, usually drive away or kill any Goths that enter their territory on sight. But those few beholder who see the value in keeping underlings and working with others might choose to enslave the Goth instead. Who better to serve a beholder than a lesser beholder? And some Goths find success serving under a beholder overlord as one of their lieutenants.
Okay, I can see the logic there. Like, especially with a beholder that takes kind to, like, gazers.
I was about to say that. Like, I think a beholder who is likely to have a gazer is the same beholder who's likely to be like, I'll enslave this Goth.
Yeah, like, you can never defeat me, you idiot.
Yeah, exactly. You're like me, but worse. So I'll have jobs that I'm too good to do.
Exactly, yeah. And you can take my gazers will always be watching.
Exactly, yeah. And beholders are like xenophobic. They're racist against any non-beholder, usually against anyone not themselves. But like those who may not be willing to lower themselves to having humanoid slaves would find the Goth and the gazer as much more palatable alternatives.
Yeah, like at least you're not a humanoid. Like you share my likeness, so that
exactly.
makes you a cut above.
You are
but still you are
I
my
am
slave.
Perfect, you are semi perfect.
Sure, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. So Goth are most likely to be found operating alone, but unlike their greater beholder kin, they lack their natural penchant for extreme xenophobia, and so instead might be found forming into clusters and lording over other creatures together. Generally, Goth will not fight each other over prey, although even in clusters, they will normally ignore each other and seek to distance themselves from others of their kind. So they'll just kind of pretend like the others aren't there.
Okay.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
But
I was trying to figure out, like, why would there be a lot of Goths hanging out together? Like, why would there be more than one typically in an area? And it actually kind of makes sense because if your leader Goth dies and then two of you are born, like, are you going to pal around to, like, try to survive?
That's
for a while,
an interesting
you know?
Point I didn't think about. Yeah. Like, number one, you're right. Like, the clusters would be difficult to form because, again, these guys are only being brought over one at a time. But yeah, the cellular division, give it a millennia, you're going to have 10 of these dudes rolling around. And if they're in a place where expansion of their territory or splitting up isn't necessarily easy, they'll be forced to spend time together. And since they have at least enough of a connection, being the same species, as not to kill each other, like, yeah, they'll be forced to either work together or just tolerate each other.
That'd be wild this is a wild addition for your purple worm tunnel.
Some goths
in there.
Yeah. I just picked, I'm not like those other Goths. I'm different.
I don't know enough about Goth culture to like tie jokes to the.
I don't know if there is Goth. Oh, you mean actual Goth culture? You mean in real life?
Yeah, like in the real world. Like,
me neither.
Wearing,
I don't.
Other than like wearing black.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about like black and then like music with guitars.
Music with guitars. I was going with like a hipster thing more than the Goth thing, wasn't there? Let's get back to actual D&D Goths. Let's get into their abilities. So I think the most unique and special characteristic of the Goth is their magical metabolism. A Goth can survive on meat, but it prefers to sustain itself with power drained from magic objects. This seems to have a practical reasoning above and beyond simply being picky eaters, though. If a Goth is starved of magic for more than several weeks, it will be forced back to its home plane of existence. Thus, any Goth wishing to avoid this constantly seeks new items to drain. When consumed by a Goth, magical items resting in its stomach slowly lose their power. Items with charges lose a charge one every second, or one every few seconds, while permanent items lose their powers within a single day. Very powerful artifacts, though, like the ones that are like blessed by deities or like cursedly created by a lich sacrificing a demon, like the real big stuff, those artifacts are too powerful to be drained and thus cannot be digested by the goth.
So it only works if they like digest it and extinguish the magic alongside of it.
Exactly.
They can't absorb it if it's infinite or whatever.
Yeah, it's like trying to swallow a pie whole, except for some reason this pie also can't be bitten. It must be swallowed whole.
I put the pie in my mouth, but it kept going endlessly.
The pie had no end.
I can't finish the pie.
But it looked so good.
Mother, save me. So this thing you said about them being forced back to their original plane of existence, uh-huh. Does that imply that the two goths born of the original goth are like still, they're not like, if that happens in the material plane, it's not like my birth plane is now tied to the material plane. It's still tied to the original plane that the original goth is from, which is to say the far realm, I guess.
Man, you were asking some good questions this episode. I just want to say that. And I don't know. You know, that's not covered. But if I was a dungeon master, that's how I would justify a pack of goths. Is like, oh, these ones don't get pulled back to their home plane because this is their home plane. They were born here.
Yeah, that's... So it could probably go one way or the other, depending on how you want to rule it.
Yeah, as for official lore, I didn't see anything written about that in any source book. But that's how I would do it. I would be like, no. This is their home plane because they were born here.
How interesting. Okay.
Yes. So though less powerful than its other beholder kin, as we've talked about excessively this whole episode, a goth still does possess deadly eye rays. The rays of a goth's six eye stalks have effects similar to the following spells. Dispel magic, inflict wounds, ray of exhaustion, scorching ray, and sleep or paralysis. This kind of depends on the edition you're playing. And then also they have a unique eye ray that is their devour magic ray, sometimes also known as their Dwemer drain ray. This ray allows them to sap away the power of magical items. This is not how they eat magic items, though, and instead the ray only temporarily neutralizes magically imbued items, which is a very handy ray to have.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, especially if it's like... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we're probably going to get more into the specifics of the rays themselves, like
what
they do in the stat block read. Okay, yeah.
True that. So rather than having an anti-magic cone, which you asked about earlier... The central eye of the goth has a mentally stunning effect on those who look at it from too close up. So a common goth tactic is to intentionally draw attention to themselves when attacking so as to capitalize on this ability. Goth are also capable of picking up items with their tendrils and can wield certain items if so desired. And I mean, they love magic items, so why not also wield them if you haven't eaten them yet? You know what I mean?
I've got four. This is like Breath of the Wild style. I have four magic swords on my bottom pieces. Uh-huh. And if it comes down to it, I will eat one for power.
Exactly.
But
exactly
right. Until then, feel my wrath.
Indeed.
Feel the wrath of these stabs.
And
can
that
you imagine
is, that,
getting like,
go ahead.
Like filleted, like just like stabbed by this thing with like a trident on it.
Yeah.
And just eye beam to death. Like it's going to stab you and hold you in place while it eye beams you until you die.
Indeed. I mean, my first thought was exactly what you said. I just pictured this goth wielding four swords. And I mean, that's amazing.
And just doing front flips like with its hover.
Yeah. Ability. All it has to do is spin rapidly and it becomes a death like a rotating razor monster.
So. Definitely going to homebrew that onto my goth.
Indeed.
Is a sword wielding like blade, like it's just a fucking Beyblade.
Yeah, it's a Beyblade
of the sky.
So in the sky. So finally, the premature death of a goth is in itself a dangerous event to be near. Such an event will cause all the magical energy stored up in the goth's body to explode violently outward as a raw magical force doing heavy damage to all in range. So like, this thing is annoying in that if you kill it, it will explode.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You could like get one close to death and capture it and then like throw it at another bad guy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this reminds me very much of the Beholder Rebuilt Cruel Eyes who will randomly explode upon meeting you.
Yes. It's a 1% chance.
Yeah, 1% chance.
See what happens.
Yeah.
And everybody dies.
But this one dies. This one explodes when it dies, no matter what.
There's no death saving throws. There's no. Yeah, it's hard with monsters. Like, how are you supposed to get it into a place like. Anything with 1 HP is still kicking, right? Like, it can still do bad things to you. So it's going to be really hard to capture
this creature without incapacitating it. Without killing. Like, you can make that known when you're doing the quote-unquote killing blow.
If you come equipped with, like, rope and a bunch of eye patches, you're good.
Indeed. That's all you need. That's all you need for any beholder, really.
That's all you need that's really any capture scenario.
That's true. Yeah, it's not limited to just beholders. Tie it up and blind it. You're probably good. Any questions about the goth?
Throw it down a hole like Palpatine and watch it just explode.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. You ready for the stat block? You want to tell me all about the goth stat block?
I do want to tell you about the goth stat block. Let me get in there.
Okay.
Man, this thing is... like the look of it, it's kind of like got a fleshy tone compared to the other goth or the other beholderkin. And
it beholders, does, which know. Defies
like
all.
Some of them are like scaly.
Yeah, the look of it in Volos defies all physical descriptions of it in the different various source books. They describe it in those books as being mottled in purple. Like, that thing just looks flesh toned.
I can see some purple coloring in like the background of, but that looks more like a shadow. This thing is like fleshy. It's got blue eyes, which is strange in this context.
Why can't it have blue eyes?
Just compared to the rest of them, like why is this one blue?
It's
and the other ones
pretty
are like
baby blues.
Like,
why you gotta not like that?
God, and then the donut hole of its eye, the ring around the eyeball is just like full of these little tiny nasty blue eyes.
Very gross. All right, I'm ready for the stat block.
We got a medium aberration here, Will, of lawful evil. Its armor class is 15 natural, and its hit points are 67 with zero feet of movement speed, but 20 feet of flying or hovering speed, which is normal for beholders.
Yeah, that's how beholders do.
So we got plus zero strength, or we do big numbers here. 10 strength, 14 dex, 16 con, 15 intelligence, 15 wisdom and 13 charisma. They are smart enough to know that they are inferior. So
indeed they are well-rounded. Otherwise there's some decent stats.
Yeah. There's not a, I like the 10 strength. That makes sense with the thing we were saying with the swords. So its swords aren't going to be like crazy strong, but they're going to be usable.
They're going to be fucking magical is what they're going to be.
Yeah, they are. We got a plus 5 intelligence saving throw, also plus 5 wisdom and plus 4 charisma, which are pretty good.
Yeah.
And then plus 5 to perception.
Okay.
Cannot be prone. 120 feet of dark vision. That's double the normal amount.
Yeah. I mean, that's superior dark vision. Maybe that's why they're called night eyes. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that.
I'm gonna take a look at the beholder stat block and see.
Okay. I was thinking like that reference might be to like something that had to do with its death or the end of it, you know, like nighttime, like, you know, riddle wordplay, but nothing ever came up. So
yeah,
I'm still not sure.
Yeah, me neither.
Let us know in the comments if you guys know why this creature is called that. I'm sure it's from either like a super early edition or a book or something like that.
Yeah. It looks here like the beholder also has 120 feet of dark vision. So.
Yeah, not better than normal beholders, but better than most creatures that
indeed
have dark vision.
True that.
So we've got languages are deep speech and undercommon, which, you know, that's cool. Deep speech is like the far realm stuff. So
yes.
That makes sense. And then undercommon, that's more like the underdark, right?
Yes.
That like basic low speech.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So challenge rating 6. We have the stunning gaze. When a creature that can see the goth's central eye starts its turn within 30 feet of the goth can force it to make a DC 14 wisdom saving throw if the goth isn't incapacitated and can see the creature. A creature that fails the save is stunned until the start of its next turn. Unless surprised, a creature can avert its eyes at the start of its turn to avoid the saving throw. If the creature does so, it can't see the goth until the start of its next turn, when it can avert its eyes again. If the creature looks at the goth in the meantime, it must immediately make the save. That's cool.
It's very handy. That makes this thing much more effective at fighting multiple creatures than it otherwise would be. Because it's basically forcing everyone to stare away, with giving it a good advantage.
Yeah, I like this. If you have a campaign or story arc that is going to have a beholder as your big bad, this is a great like intro to fighting it, or like a lead up. This is like the mini boss version of the beholder.
Basically, yeah.
So next we have Death Throes. And that's Throes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the Goth dies, the magical energy within it explodes, and each creature within 10 feet of it must make a DC 14 dexterity saving throw, taking 13 or 3d8 force damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one. I thought that would be stronger.
I was about to say that. I would imagine this magical energy explosion being much more powerful than that.
Or more distance. Like, it's not even a fireball.
Yeah, 10 feet. Yeah, that's not very. Yeah.
Challenge rating 6. Like, I guess, if you had to fight it, and then at the very end, it's going to do splash damage to, you know, the guy stabbing it to death.
Yeah. Okay. Can you imagine rolling 3?
You don't want to, like, punish too hard.
You imagine rolling 3 ones on those D8s, though?
That would suck.
Yeah, that would suck. Poof.
You got slapped with, like, tentacle, like, bile. Like, oh, it burns. Okay, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it would be disgusting more than anything.
So the actions are a bite, which is a melee weapon attack with +6 to hit, a reach of 5 feet on one target. It's going to do 9 or 2d8 piercing damage. And next we have the eye rays. So here comes. Goth shoots 3 of the following magical eye rays at random. You're going to reroll your duplicates, and you're going to choose 1 to 3 targets that it can see within 120 feet. And now the choosing of the targets, that's kind of at the DM's discretion or whoever's running the monster, mm-hmm. I feel like, right? You can kind of...
Yes, I think generally speaking, you choose the targets afterwards, after the 3 rays are rolled for. And it's even presented as such. You know, it's first, the goth shoots 3 rays following magical eye rays at random. You do that, then it says choosing 1 to 3 targets you can see within 20 feet. So to me, that reads of you roll the random table and then you choose the targets.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm into that. I kind of like choosing, like, if you want to, I don't see why not. You could just like fire them at random people, because you're not rolling the random for the targets. But if you want to, I guess you could do that.
I mean, yeah, that could be fun if that's the way you want to go.
Right. So the first ray is the Devour Magic Ray. Mm-hmm. The targeted creature must succeed on a DC 14 dexterity saving throw or have one of its magic items lose all magical properties until the start of the Goth's next turn. If the object is a charged item, it also loses 1d4 charges. Determine the affected item randomly, ignoring single-use items such as potions and scrolls. So I guess you would have to roll like a random die against like a chart full of your player's magic items. So if your DM starts asking you for that beforehand,
although
heads up.
A challenge rating 6, I could see you fighting this at a low enough level where a lot of characters probably would only have one magic item or 2 at most.
Yeah, that's true. It really depends on your setting, but that's probably closer to the average.
Yeah.
Next one is Enervation Ray. The targeted creature must make a DC 14 constitution saving throw, taking 18 or 4d8 necrotic damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a success.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. Here's the damage ray.
Yeah, that's good. So pushing ray, the targeted creature must succeed on a DC 14 strength saving throw or be pushed up to 15 feet directly away from the goth and have its speed halved until the start of the goth's next turn.
See, this is where...
That's cool. It's
go ahead.
Telekinetic ray light.
Yeah, it's telekinetic ray light. And also, like, this is where the goth would really benefit itself by layering up in a place with a lot of, like, edges and cliffs and, like, drops and chasms.
Yeah, totally. Position yourself to do... If the pushing ray comes out, you can optimize it.
Indeed.
Okay, so next is the fire ray. The targeted creature must succeed on a DC 14 dexterity saving throw or take 22 4d10 fire damage.
Yeah, so this is another damage ray. The sucky thing for the goth about both of these rays, their enervation and the fire ray, is that fire and necrotic are probably 2 of the most commonly resisted damage types in the game.
Yeah, okay.
So, Tough Luck Goth.
Yeah. It's...
But Fire and Darkness, a very gothic combination.
Yeah, I see. I see what you did there.
Okay.
Now we have the paralyzing ray.
Yeah.
So the targeted creature must succeed on a DC 14 Constitution saving throw or be paralyzed for 1 minute. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success.
It's a good ray.
Finally, yeah, it's straightforward. I mean, a lot of these can be really powerful if you get hit with multis. You know, like,
yeah,
if we're going to target one guy, paralyze him, and then just do like a gang of damage.
Right.
So now we have the sleep ray. The targeted creature must succeed on a DC 14 wisdom saving throw or fall asleep and remain unconscious for 1 minute. The target awakens if it takes damage or another creature takes an action to wake it. This ray has no effect on constructs and undead. So that's cool. Your artificer robot will be okay.
For sure. Yeah. Also elves. Elves would be fine. So I was thinking about how this creature, it's not as bad as a beholder when it comes to working with others. And it's smart. It's a smart creature. What is that? A 15 intelligence? So it's a very smart individual. So I was thinking about scenarios where this thing would work with others. And I think the obvious one is like, this would make a really good employee for a wizard. Like a powerful like archmage, because it's like you just pay the dude in like whatever scrap magic bullshit you put together like over the years that you don't care about as his bi-monthly payment, and it'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, and you can give it you can make some bullshit charge items too. Like that seems like the moneymaker. If you're gonna keep this thing around long term, you're gonna want something to feed it, you know, on the regular, that's not going to just be like destroyed after it. I guess it would have to eat and destroy it. The ray is what takes the charge, or whatever the other effect. But yeah, that's cool. I have all these magic items. I need this guy. If he dies, he'll explode, and then I'll be ready to swoop and kill whoever came in my house.
Exactly.
But yeah, you're right. This is a cool little foot soldier for like an evil mage or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever bad guy.
I think it's a perfect combination. A symbiotic relationship, we call those.
Yeah.
Any questions about the goth before we get ready for our long rest?
No, I think I'm good. I think this has been a really interesting like take on this creature.
Yeah,
I like the mini boss feel to it.
I think the goth is my second favorite of the beholderkin we've talked about thus far, with the first being the Death Kiss. But this is a close second for me. I like this one.
Cool. Yeah. I'll have to wait until we get through all of them to choose.
But, yeah. We got some wild ones coming up. The Spectator might become my favorite one after we do that episode, but we'll see. I think that's it. So we can get ready for our long rest now.
Yeah. Where we are not going to be building our Beholder this episode. We take a break on Beholder episodes from that, but still come stick around and figure out what my Beholder fact is going to be.
Indeed.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the long rest. And on this long rest, we're not building our beholder. We're going to take a break from that. And, Will, I'm going to hit you with one of these sweet, tasty beholder facts. You ready?
I'm ready.
Every beholder has three hearts. Two hearts to work exclusively to move blood beyond the jowls, while the third keeps circulation of a flow to the organs. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Is that official lore, or are you just making things up? Where are you getting this from?
This is a fact about octopuses.
Okay. All right, because that one you could have sold me on that one. If you told me like, oh yeah, I found it in Dragon Magazine 247, I would be like, oh shit, that's crazy.
Yeah, Dragon Magazine does have some weird ass shit in it.
Dragon Magazine loves to talk about how monsters fuck. So
yeah, they sure do, and how they like defecate and like make friends, I guess.
Yeah, in Zuckmoy's cradle. Let's not forget that one.
Oh, God. I remember seeing all the Dragon magazines for the Demogorgon. And I'm struggling because, like, we interviewed Luke Gygax, and he specifically called it Demigorgon, like, said it like that. And I knew.
Yeah.
I knew already, but, like.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Internally. Geez.
It's just. Okay. I want to talk about this. So I understand that the official pronunciation is Demigorgon, but it just doesn't make sense when it has an O instead of an I or even an E. Where do you get the Demi from?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. But like Luke Gygax told me about his dad. His dad wrote it and said it to him out loud. And now that's I just kind of have to roll with it. We haven't shouted out Demogorgon in so long, Will. You just wrote him out of the show, basically.
I didn't write him out of anything. You were in charge of the Demogorgon cult clergy. Yeah, that.
I mean, I can only shout him out when you mention him.
Well, I just
the
did.
Rules. Well, shout out to Demogorgon.
Goddamn right. Goddamn right.
Oh, I feel so powerful.
All right. Now that we got our beholder fact out of the way, let's talk about our ongoing contest on social media, where we are giving away two copies of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, the newest book coming out detailing one of my favorite campaign settings in D&D. And if you are interested in this book, or at least as interested as I am, go ahead and enter the win. You can do that on Twitter by tweeting a link to your favorite episode of our show or any of our shows. SuperQuest Saga is just as relevant, so if you want to tweet that out, that's fine. Just make sure you do it with the hashtag DungeonCast, and you'll be entered to win. And on May 18th, the day the book is released, we will be announcing a winner. There's also a way to enter on Instagram, which Brian will detail.
Find the post on Instagram, like it, make sure you're following the account, and start tagging people, individuals you may or may not know, in the comment section. One comment and one tag equals one entry, and be sure to do those separately. Will, which head of Demogorgon do you think the Twitter belongs to and the Instagram belongs to?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. Do you mind refreshing me on the names of the two heads? Do you remember?
I just worship Demogorgon and I don't worship the heads individually.
The individuals. Yeah. It feels almost blasphemous, like it's heresy.
Yeah, like you have to mention them like in time, but it is Amael and Hethrodiah, just so you know.
Okay.
Amael is like the pre, before you see Demogorgon, Amael has thought about you probably.
And, okay.
You know, and after you see Demogorgon, Hethrodiah is usually the one that's going to come out and kick your ass, like with the physical.
You know what? I feel like Hethrodiah is definitely the Twitter part of our cult because Twitter gets spicy. And it sounds like Hethrodiah is a pretty spicy individual.
Yeah, they're more like, I'm going to knock you down. I'm going to smash you with these tentacles, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's Twitter. Probably. That's Twitter for sure.
So Instagram is like the plotting, like devious head.
Indeed.
Of the Gorgon. So, yeah, that feels right. That feels good.
I'm glad we clear that up.
Yeah. I think we're just so overdue for some Demogorgon talk. I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, man, it's been so long on the show.
You know,
it's been
what?
Since the Demogorgon episode.
We did a lot of Demon Lords last year. And,
yes.
You know, I feel like the Demon Lords, at least for the first half of the year, kind of overshadowed the giantness of the giants of the Year of the Giant. And I didn't want that to happen to the beholders this year. So I've been pumping the brakes on the Demon Lord lore. But I mean, I can always turn it back up whenever you want.
See, now you admit it. You admit having written our patron.
Oh, what have I done? Oh, no. I'm about to be smoked by the mighty Demogorgon.
How could you do this to us? It's our namesake.
Well, before I am smoked, I think we should probably call it a game.
Yeah, totally.
And I guess we will talk to you guys later. See you guys next week.
Bye.
The Dungeon Cast.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.